Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 216 for comics originally released on September 28th, 2011. This is the fourth week of the New 52 from DC, and starting us off, our pick from that group of books is All-Star Western number 1.
Boy, I'm really interested in how you liked it. You kind of probably figured that I would like it. I like Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray's writing. I love Moritat's art and just the Jonah Hex, you know, kind of stepping out of his traditional kind of chasing people down in the Old West bounty hunter role, where it's more of a, you know, solving a mystery kind of a thing. I didn't know how I was going to like that, but I loved it. I loved this issue. It was my favorite one of the week, and pretty much it's right up there at the top of my favorite one of the 52.
Wow, interesting. Now, I figured this was going to be a hard sell for me going in. You know, I'm just not that much of a Western fan. I don't hate the genre or anything. I just usually don't seek it out. So this had a little bit of that kind of barrier. I've, you know, read a Jonah Hex series or two to completion. Now, granted, that was the Hex series that was more sci-fi or whatever. So I don't hate the character either. The first question I had, though, reading this, it's like, okay, it's set in Gotham City. And I'm like, well, where is Gotham City? That always felt like more of an East Coast-ish kind of a thing. And you've got this classic Western character of Jonah Hex there. And it just felt a little out of place. It's like, why is he there again? And it's like, okay, he's there to solve a crime. This whole thing read kind of like a bizarre twist on a Sherlock Holmes story. With Jonah Hex being the consulting detective of, you know, the, I don't say the equivalent of Sherlock Holmes, but playing that slot, if you will. Amadeus Arkham, you know, of that family that'll bring you that famous Arkham Asylum in the future, you know, playing the Dr. Watson role. And it just seemed like a really strange kind of a pairing. It worked oddly well. But the one thing that just drove me a little nuts, oh, we get Mayor Cobblepot, obviously an ancestor of the Penguin, you know, and he too has that monocle. And it seems like any time a family moved to Gotham, they like never had the strength of you know, whatever to leave. We get Alan Wayne, the Gate Brothers, Cyrus Pinckney, you know, all of which, you know, were from the recent Batman Gates of Gotham miniseries and other things set in the past of Gotham. And it just strikes me as funny how many of the family names are so entrenched in Gotham. Because, of course, it's such a wonderful place to live.
I think they were very pointedly trying to, you know, tie it in with the mainstream DCU, and it can't be accidental, you know, that Gates of Gotham series just came out and they had, you know, such strong ties to that. And it worked strangely well for me. Like I said, you know, you make a good point. That's kind of all-star Eastern as of, you know, cause it's in the East as opposed to the West. But I was really surprised at how much I liked it.
I mean, the story was good, and for a Western twist on a Sherlock Holmes thing, it worked well. The big thing for me is while the art itself was fine, the coloring was driving me nuts. It was too monochromatic for my tastes, too bland. It's like, well, it's a period piece, so let's sepia tone it up. You know, let's do it in this kind of a grainy black and whitish feel to it, so it feels like an old Western movie or some such. And things were just getting lost in the background. You know, there wasn't any coloring to really guide my attention to the right spot in the panels. And I know they were doing that for effect, but they did it in a way that I felt ran counter to making it easy to read and to really give it that sense of foreground, midground, background. And there were a lot of panels that were just busy, and that was accentuated by the fact that everything was kind of in the same depth of field, if you will, because of the coloring. I mean, for me, at this point, I'll stick around for the first arc, but I don't really feel any need to stay past that at this point. Now, whether this grows on me after this or not, you know, with the next couple issues, don't know. I didn't hate it, but I didn't like it enough to say, oh, wow, I've got to get this. But again, I went in kind of expecting that, so I wasn't too surprised.
Yeah, I loved this book. The coloring, I kind of liked that old-timey kind of feel that they were going for with it, with the more muted sepia tones. It actually worked for me pretty well, and I have been a huge fan of Justin Norman Moritat's his pen name, his art for a long time, since I think I first saw him do an Elephant Man. Mm-hmm. And then I followed him. He did a bunch of work on the Spirit with DC as well. But boy, I just love his art. And just watching this, if I see like storytelling I love, art I love, you know, this really clicked for me. And I really like that touch point to the Gotham guys. What I'll be really curious about is where they go after the first arc.
Metropolis, of course.
Yeah. I mean, well, that would be interesting, you know, but, you know, I can't see it like hanging out in Gotham, you know, for the whole time. And I would like to see it move back into the West at some point as well. But we'll see where it goes as the title progresses. I really liked it, though, and it got a 5 out of 5 for me.
Hmm. Interesting. I mean, for me, it was a 3 out of 5. I found it just kind of there. Again, while I agree that Moritat did a great job on the art, the coloring just made it so bland and stuff that I really don't think it served his art well. But, you know, again, I went in not really expecting it to be to my tastes. They were playing to a different audience, and, you know, that's kind of what happened. The Hooded Woman sighting is on the page after the Onion News Network ad, kind of a little right of center in that big crowded barroom scene. She's easy to spot out because she blends in with the entire background and everybody else.
She does have little swirls of muted color around her, but
blend into the people behind her. I didn't even notice there was that effect on her until you just mentioned it. That's my complaint about the coloring.
Next up, we've got Annihilator's Earthfall from Marvel. Another Abnett and Lanning production. I've got Tan Ang Huat on the art, and I'm kind of, his art's growing on me. I'm not having the reaction that I did when he did that Silver Surfer series where it didn't work for me. It was okay. It wasn't something that I came away saying, wow, I loved that, but it worked for me in the story. The storytelling was good. The panel-to-panel continuity worked good. He actually has a decent sense of motion and fluidity in his character poses, I thought.
There's an aspect, particularly that first big splash page on the second page of the story there, where you know how you could take a widescreen movie and slam it into a regular TV set, old style, you know, mm-hmm. and everybody just seems really skinny and tall? A little bit of that sort of a feel here.
If you flip it to the very next page, though, like if you look at Icon, I think that's the Space Knight, right?
Yeah.
Down on the bottom, I kind of like that pose that she's in. I don't know how practical it would be, but it's kind of neat. And we're Gladiator and Beta Ray Bill on the next page over. I kind of like the poses he's got a lot of the characters in.
Well, and you've got the motion lines to make it feel like they're moving, and it gives that sense of action. So you're right, he does do a good job with that. You know, I guess for me, is I liked the lead story here because there is a backup feature too, but it felt really heavy on the setup. You know, and then we get, particularly when we got to the end, and it's like, oh, well, they're setting us up to look bad to them. It's flipped to the splash page introducing the random assortment of Avengers. Because it just seemed like an odd collection of different members of different Avenger teams because they've got so many teams these days. I mean, it wasn't a big deal. It just felt a little funny. It's like, well, there are a couple of secret Avengers, a couple of new Avengers, a couple of other Avengers, and yeah, whatever. So I guess they just grab whoever's handy. I mean,
they're hanging out.
Yeah. They were having a card game. No. I like Abnett and Lanning's writing, and this felt more like kind of a roller coaster ride, you know, where you get a lot of action, things are moving and stuff, but not too deep, which I felt was a little not quite what I usually expect from those guys. And in some ways, the roller coaster ride aspect was good. It was an entertaining, action-oriented issue. In other ways, it left me a little wanting in terms of story progression and stuff like that. There were a couple of things, though, again, like you said, that were set it apart from your average comic. If you go to the third story page from the end, we've got that's Gladiator right there of the Imperial Guard, blanking on his name. And he's doing the heat vision thing, and he swung his head. And the way that's depicted visually, very cool. I liked that. And again, the way the people are doing the shape-shifting, it's very clear, ooh, they're shape-shifting, you know what I mean? And that's something that there are a couple of times I've seen where it's like suddenly they just look different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the art conveyed the story well, but I would have liked to have gotten a little bit more story in this issue, but that may just be as much a reflection of me being on a kick of I'd like a little more self-containment in some of these issues, just in general. And I'm going to blame DC for that, having given me a bunch of new number ones and virtually none of them having that kind of containment. And that this just maybe was the wrong story at the wrong time for me. You know what I mean? It's not bad.
Right.
But, you know, four issues, get a little further into the story in the first issue.
I think that that's a kind of common, you know, malady of comic books.
Oh, yeah. Certainly late. Not unique to this.
Yeah.
It's funny because the backup feature with Raccoon and Groot, you know, it almost felt like I heard the quote-unquote director yell action right as we started in there, you know, because they just quickly get into the stuff. Ooh, there's a bar fight. Oh, they're going. Again, roller coaster kind of a ride, very action-oriented. I kept waiting for the plot to enter in. And this was very much just the intro to the story. In fairness, it had five pages. So, okay, get some action in there and get to where you've got the reveal and whoops, you're out of space. So, okay, I get that. Do that over four pages, you get the equivalent of a single issue story. So we'll see how well that holds together when it's done.
Yeah, I like this okay. It wasn't the greatest thing, but I mean, I liked it above average. I mean, I gave it a 4. It was a solid book. I like the continuation of Abnett and Lanning's cosmic stuff. I like Groot and Rocket Raccoon. You know, that's a fun backup story. I think, you know, given the five pages, I think they did a pretty good job of managing those five pages, you know, and not having it be a lot of setup and stuff. You got some good action going on there. It was pretty effectively done. I do think that the being on Earth aspect of the story is kind of cool and different, because we've seen him out in space so much. I am going to be curious on how we get the interaction with the Avengers, and I really want to see how Abnett and Lanning deal with that and see if they can do it in a way that doesn't, you know, fall into the standard cliches of, you know, let's beat on each other for a while and then come to the realization that we don't need to. But, you know, maybe not. We'll see how it goes in the second issue.
Yeah, yeah. I did like how they played up the fact that Quasar's like, hey, but this is my home planet. And they're like, so?
Yeah.
It's just another alien world to us. And it's like, okay, that was kind of fun. It will be interesting when we actually get the interaction between the two teams, because most of them should know Beta Ray Bill on friendly terms. They should all know Quasar. So if they get to the let's just fight first, that is going to be a little disappointing. But not too unlikely, I think.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this was a high 3, but it was just a 3. It didn't quite make it above that, but it did come close. It was one of those that I did consider giving the 4 to. It just wasn't quite there for me.
Yeah, the thing that really knocked it up for me was the Earth aspect of it, of the story. It was I really liked that that twist on the story. And I'm a sucker for Cosmo. So it seems like Cosmo's running the show on this thing, doesn't he?
It does. It does. He's certainly taken over as leader while Rocket Raccoon's elsewhere. I was disappointed that we didn't get like Nova pulled into this or something, because I think he's hefty enough he could have hung with that crowd.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it was fun. I like it fine. Nothing wrong with a strong 3 rating, in my opinion. You know, we'll see how it goes. I'm glad to see they're continuing to do the cosmic stuff. I think it would be a shame if that kind of area that Abnett and Lanning have really carved out and developed pretty well, if that were to just kind of stop, I would be disappointed with that.
Yeah, I agree. Move on to our last choice here. We've got Artifacts number 10. We're into our, I guess, third section of the story and our third artist on the story. There's a certain lack of continuity. I went back and I read more. I like Jeremy Hahn a lot more than Wills Portas. Well, who was doing the middle segment? Did Wills start it out?
No, he took over around issue 4, I think.
Yeah, okay. The first artist I remember liking a lot, and then Wills came on, and I wasn't that. It didn't work as well for me. Jeremy Hahn I like a lot better. So I guess I'm kind of glad that they switched. I would have rather they stuck with that original artist the whole time through, though. But I'm sure there were reasons why that didn't happen. So as far as the story goes, I do like the way that they do the recap page at the front, you know, with the little art things and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of catch us up on what's going on instead of the Marvel style where it's just the text block. I like the little illustrations that go along with it.
Well, it feels more like the TV show where you get the scenes from the previous episodes kind of
right,
deal.
Right, exactly. It works well for me. I like it. And the story itself, though, I guess I'm going to have to see how it ends. You know, it's just like, you know, so we've got all these artifacts, you know, it's like a really obvious statement, right? I mean, I'm not... It's going so long, you know what I mean? It's like we're 10 issues into it, and it's been a really long time because there's been delays. And I'm just – that feeling of momentum I don't have.
That was the first thing I put down in my notes on this is, first off, this issue's 3 months late. And then I went and looked up when all the stuff was coming out. And it's essentially a bi-monthly series. And – you know, the first issue of this came out at the end of July of last year. And while I'm kind of enjoying the story, the slow schedule is, like, really making it hard for the story to build up any momentum with me. And I've read, and I'm sure you have too, like 2,500 comics since the first issue of the series came out 16 months ago. So it's a little hard for me to really remember, now, what did the art in that first issue look like? What were the details of that? It's like I get the overall story. I remember the highlights or whatever, but it's not one where, even with as good of a previously in, you know, page we get here, that I get back into the story. And part of that is, I think, well, the story is good. Too little is happening in each issue, and each issue's just far enough apart from the previous that the story just doesn't flow that well for me. By the time it starts to get up to speed, oh, it's over, I'm going to have to wait a couple of months. You know, and that's frustrating. Now, it's not a big deal if you really remember clearly where all the plot lines left off in the previous issue. But, like, this new artifact wielder's backstory is given before he's really introduced in this issue. You know, we go from the stuff with the Cyber Force and the Hunter Killers to page flip. We get this big splash page of this guy with a pool ball or whatever in his mouth. And we start getting his story. I'm like, now, who the hell is this again? And then we get a couple of pages where he's face-to-face with I'm blanking on the names because, again, it's been long enough.
The curator guy?
No, Tom Judge.
The Rapture and
The Rapture, yeah. the one with the fire thing, and the one with the wings, I guess, would be
Angelus.
Whereas if they had kind of started with that reset up and then get his origin, maybe that would have worked better. But, you know, it's an event series that's coming out a little slowly in a universe that, frankly, I'm not all that deeply familiar with. I mean, I know who the players are, but I gotta stop and think a little. It's not like, oh, that's Superman, that's the Flash, or, you know, Spider-Man and the Avengers, or whatever. I mean, I understood what was going on here, but the storytelling style could have, and I think should have, been a little bit more accessible. And part of the problem is there's a lot of characters in this event. And really, it should be trying to get us excited about all of them to where we think, ooh, wow, I'd love to read a series about this guy. Versus, now, who is this guy again? It's doing an okay job of some of this, but just an okay job. And I think the release schedule is part of the problem there.
Yeah. I have to agree with that. It's challenging, let's just say, to really follow everything that's going on in this, mostly because, as you say, it's not a universe that I have complete access, you know, to in my mind at a moment's notice of like all the trivia and details about. And there's some pretty intricate stuff going on here with the interactions between these people and their relationships to each other and the artifacts that they have and, you know, the status quo of the universe and all this kind of stuff. And there's just so much going on in it. I think this is seriously something that when it's done and you can get a trade paperback of the whole thing and you kind of, you know, look at those pages in the back of the trade paperback that I'm sure that are going to be there that are going to introduce who all the people are, what the deal is with them, and then just read the whole thing through, it's going to be vastly more understandable and enjoyable than reading it serialized the way that it is, especially with the delays that we've been getting.
Yeah, it's the fits and spurts aspect of the release that I think is hampering my enjoyment of it, because there's some good stuff here. I mean, I really like the two-page splash, the staple, which gave a good sense of size and scope to this underground setting and stuff. It was just, you know, I flipped to that and it's like, hey, that's cool. So what they're doing here is good, but it's challenging because of the publishing schedule, not because Ron Marz is specifically trying to challenge us as readers. I mean, he's certainly not slacking off. He's doing a fine job on the writing, but this is one where I'm going to kind of harp on the accessibility of the issue. There are a lot of characters that I don't, and I didn't go double check, so maybe they are, but I don't think are really named well and clearly early enough when they're introduced in the story, in the issue, you know, to make things as easy on a reader as they could be. Now, some people may say, oh, you're just being a lazy reader, and frankly, no, I'm going to disagree with that. If I were only reading the Top Cow universe, I'm sure that I would have had no problem with this. However, this is fighting for, you know, kind of the share of my attention against the Marvel universe, the DC universe, everything going on that I'm reading at Dark Horse, Image, and all these other publishers. So if they want to fight for my mind share or whatever, and keep me engaged, they're going to have to work at that. Because in addition to all the comics I'm reading, I'm watching quite a few TV shows and doing other stuff.
I think that's valid. I think that's a very valid point because, like it or not, you know, Marvel and DC as the big dogs, I mean, they can make certain assumptions. You know, it's like people who are reading Marvel books, you know, they kind of know the general Marvel universe. DC, you know, they've got some basic thing going on. But even they, you know, one of the big complaints against like X-Men, for instance, is they're so insular, and someone going into like, at least one of my complaints is I can't feel like I can go into the X-Books because it's the same kind of thing. It's got all this intricate backstory that I'm not versant in, and boy, it just makes it really difficult to get into them. And it's the same thing here, but something that they should be more cognizant of because they know that they've got a smaller mind share of the readers, and they want to be bringing in additional new readers.
Well, think of it this way. Whenever somebody gets hired at a company, there's some sort of onboarding process to get them up to speed as to exactly what their job's going to be, what they're expected to do, who they report to, where they go get, you know, pens and supplies and all that kind of crap, or, you know, how the company kind of is. You know, and some companies have formal training, some you just kind of learn it by osmosis, you know, whatever. And it differs wildly from company to company. And some people can be productive, like, the day they first get there, because there's a very clear, this is how you do this, this is what we're going to expect, let me help you with this, okay, boom, you're done, go. You know, and others, it's a bit more nebulous, a little unclear, and it takes a while to kind of get into the swing of things. Most comic book titles, I don't think editorially or creatively they've got that kind of mindset or even the concept of onboarding a new reader. Now, one could argue, oh, this is a 13-issue miniseries, which on the one hand is true up until we get to 14 where it becomes ongoing, but we'll ignore that. Even with a 13-issue event title like this, there ought to be some onboarding throughout the thing to where somebody could hop on it late. You know, I should be able to be talking to somebody at a comic shop not having read any of the Top Cow stuff and them saying, wow, this is great stuff. Here, just grab the next issue, see what you think. You know, in most comics, you can't just grab the next issue and see what you think because it's like, well, what the hell's going on? And This was not at that level of, oh my god, what the hell's going on, but there was just enough, even as I have read the last nine, it's like, now where did this leave off? Who are these again? And I can figure it out as I go, but every time I feel like I'm kind of scratching my head, wondering what's going on, that, I don't say it's a strike against the book or whatever, but it works against it, whereas if I feel like it's just such a natural, it's obvious what's going on, I can just hop right in at any point and get carried along with the story. That's the experience you want readers to have. You know, it's like jumping into an episode. I'm going to go with Lost as just a good example. You're going to understand the big picture? Hell no. A couple issues later, you're going to start to get it, though. But you're also going to get enough in the issue or the episode to understand what's going on. Here, it felt like they were just moving chess pieces across the board to a degree. And there were quite a bit going on. And, you know, I don't want to say there was no story or whatever, but it just seems to be going from almost cliffhanger to cliffhanger. If it was something I'm reading, you know, in a single sitting, which I, you know, ought to consider doing when I get the 13th issue, this would just go so much better for me.
Right. And, you know, it's not just you. I'm in the same boat, which, you know, on one hand, it's fair. You know, you just say, look, we really should take that into account when putting together a series like this, that you have to have some amount of reintroduction. And maybe it's just a more, I mean, this is not the best way of doing it, but I mean, having a more comprehensive what has gone before with kind of like a, instead of the house ad on the inside front cover, kind of like a who's who of who all these 13 people and what the artifacts are. And, you know, this is more, you know, the previously in artifacts that kind of gives you kind of the main through story of what's going on, but it doesn't position all the players on the board and who they are and what all this stuff is. And that's what's kind of missing. But it, like I said, that's not the best, right?
I would say instead of that, when we get like Tom Judge and stuff, just have a little caption. Hey, this is Tom Judge. This is which artifact he's got or whatever. Is that ideal? No, I'd rather that be an integral part of the story. But at least give me what I need as I need it. Versus why is this guy telling us this backstory and who the hell is he telling it to again and where did things leave off? I don't want it to get to the point where it was like the Claremont X-Men, where every time Cyclops is first seen in an issue, it's like, oh, because I fell as a child from a plane, saving my brother from a plane wreck or whatever, I've been, you know, injured and I cannot control my optic blast, but I am the leader of the X-Men team, yada, yada, yada. And whenever Storm would come in, we get the whole thing about her claustrophobia. She's a, you know, used to be a goddess, controls the weather, and, you know, about an encyclopedic, you know, entry condensed into a, you know, haiku or something. You know, it's like, I don't necessarily need that either, but I really got to think if they were to build in a more accessible aspect across the board, and again, nothing's not specific to this, but really just everywhere, comic sales would be better.
Well, I think really what, you know, the bottom line is that if you're going to do an event, get enough issues done in advance and make sure that you have enough of a commitment from your creators that you can publish it monthly. Well, I mean, I don't think I'd have anywhere near, even though I don't read, you know, I have all the other stuff that I'm reading. If this 10th issue was coming out in month 10 of, you know, after it started, I don't think I'd be having the problem.
I agree with that, but let's take that to the extreme. Suppose it wasn't monthly. Suppose for some miracle they were able to get this out weekly. And we were 10 weeks into this, and it was just a rapid fire. I remember exactly where it left off. I just read it last week. I really think I would have given this, because my rating right now is a strong 3, but just a 3. I think if it had that kind of momentum of a monthly, it would have been certainly a 4. If it had the momentum of, say, a weekly, it might have even been a 5. Just
maybe
because
bi-weekly. I just think, like, weekly, boy, you're hitting too much into people's pocketbook. I think it would have had a problem on that respect.
I agree with the financial aspect, but in terms of the story momentum,
oh sure,
I wouldn't have minded, oh, I'm just getting the next chapter of the story, because they're coming out rapid fire.
Yeah. Right. You know, given that it's 13 issues, right, mm-hmm. I think that a bi-weekly schedule so that you tell the 13-issue story
in 6 months,
you know, in 6 months instead of a little over a year, that would be a lot better.
But, well, we're starting to get towards a year and a half. Yeah.
You know, a year and a half, 2 years, it gets a little much.
Yeah. But I think part of what worked with 52, with Countdown, with Trinity, is that they had that rapid-fire momentum.
Right.
And you can tell less story in each installment. You can deal with a bigger cast. And they've got 13 characters here. It's a big cast. So this is something that I really think if it had been, and I agree, it would have been a big hit on the pocketbook. If it had been weekly, though, my enjoyment would have been better. I still would have been in that early kind of honeymoon phase of, wow, this is a fun universe, versus am I ever going to get that next installment? So it comes down to, it's not just what's on the page, but what you remember of what was on the page previously that I think factors in. Again, for me, this is a very solid and very strong 3 out of 5, and one that I would have liked to give a higher rating to, but I just didn't feel that attached to the characters and really into the story.
Yeah, I got the same 3 on it, and I think that read in a trade paperback format, when it's completed, it'll definitely be a solid 4, if not better, for people. I think the story is going to flow much better. It's just, in this format, it's having a hard time for me.
Yeah, yeah.
One other thing I wanted to point out this week, before we close out, is just, I don't know if you've read it yet, but Breed 3, which we've talked about before.
I have not.
Anyone who is a fan of any of Jim Starlin's creator-owned stuff, Dreadstar, his Weird, W-Y-R-D, Weird, and others, you absolutely want to start looking for the back issues of Breed and picking up Breed 3, because you start seeing some of those other Jim Starlin characters in issue 5.
That's cool. One of the things I've been feeling about that series, and again, I haven't read issue 5, it's at the top of my to-read stack, but is, you know, very exposition heavy, but also just a ton of story as a result in each issue. I mean, it's almost felt like each issue was the equivalent of a modern miniseries, if you will.
It's at least equivalent to 2 issues of most comics done by most people.
Totally, totally. There is no space wasted. You know, they'll go for a page and they, now granted, they'll be telling you a lot of the story, but you get some images to go with it. It's not as much of the in the moment for the backstory, but you're getting a lot of in the moment now. So it's kind of got that 2 levels of the story going on, which right there gives it kind of that twice the story or whatever.
There's also a decent number of panels. I mean, you got a couple of splash pages used where they need to be used in here, but you don't have, you know, so many big splashes, double page splashes and stuff. And the pages that have panels, I mean, there are a lot of pages here that have, you know, like 8, 9 panels on them. And it doesn't, you know, because Starlin does a job kind of like Perez, where, I mean, he can put,
yeah,
he can make a 9, 10, 12 panel page work. You know, the design that he does and the way he tells the story, he packs a lot of story into this book.
Well, in this age of decompressed comics, this is what I would call a compressed comic. It has got a lot of material in there. You're getting your money's worth, and it's Jim Starlin.
There is a lot of action in this issue. He's like, Breed is going up against the brothers, and there's a lot of action. And then a lot of other stuff happens, too, that's very surprising. You know, it's like, wow, I didn't see that coming. And, you know, just some very cool stuff. Excellent issue. Excellent issue.
Well, it's I think a 6, 7, or maybe it's gone to 8 issues or whatever. We'll be certain to probably review the final issue of it and stuff. I think we covered the first. It's, I've been liking it, but it's also one that takes a little bit more time to read than your average comic for all the right reasons.
Right. I just wanted to point it out because, you know, people who like, for instance, Dreadstar, who have not been checking this out, they should check it out.
So. Speaking of Perez, I did read the New Teen Titans Games hardcover that came out last week and enjoyed that.
I still have that on my to-read pile. I flipped through it and looked at the art, which is gorgeous.
Oh, George
and
Perez.
And I read the text pieces about how long it took. Well, at least the front one, you know, by Wolfman, I guess, that was talking about how long it took. And then he said, don't read the one at the back until after you read the story. So I didn't read that one yet. But, yeah, it looks beautiful.
Yeah, it reminds me how much I miss kind of that era of the Titans, which for me was kind of a high watermark for the team, the series, the concept, or whatever. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Huntress number 1 from DC, Avengers 1959 number 1 from Marvel, and The Last of the Greats number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.